Thanks, Eileen. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Wash your hands.
Good afternoon on this Tuesday afternoon. How are you? Hope you're in good form. 51551 for your texts. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. Thanks so much to Brenda for keeping the seat warm yesterday. Have you got your bit of retail therapy done? There were some very excited people on the news last night, wasn't there? That woman with her daughter looking on lovingly. Well, you have to touch and you have to feel and you have to smell. She was very excited about the prospects of being back out and doing a bit of shopping. I was off for a couple of days and got some good weather as well down the country. And I was sitting out one of the days enjoying the sunshine. And I was just looking around and taking in the bird song, just as you do, as you do. And I saw this crow alight on a smoking chimney, as you do. And I was looking, I was going, why is that crow alighting on a smoking chimney? He's going to do himself some harm. Maybe he's cold, but it was a lovely day. The sun was shining. He wasn't cold. So what was he doing there? And then he flew away and another crow alighted on the chimney, the smoking chimney, and made it his job to get in over the smoke, as if he was having some sort of, treatment at a spa, sort of a crow spa. Intercounty travel and all that, they can go now and they can have a spa treatment. Smoked crow, holy smoked crow. So I didn't know. Jenny thought that they were probably warming up and that's what they do. So I looked it up, as you do, and I discovered that crows are very intelligent. When it comes to intelligent birds, they're in the top 10%. So very bright birds. And they've discovered that if they bathe themselves or shower themselves or whatever in smoke, that it works as a delousing process. So they get rid of all the little mites and ticks and horrible little parasites that live on their feathers and on their skin. They don't like the smoke. Now, I don't know if it kills them or whether they go flitting off down your chimney and into your fire and then you know, I don't know what happens. But the crows have discovered that this acts as a delousing treatment. Isn't that fascinating? I thought that was fascinating. And then, you know by now, everyone's talking about it. The free poster in the Irish Times. See, we're just fascinated by anything that's free. And there it is, the Ireland's most common garden birds. And the brilliant thing is, if you go online, this is the exciting part of it. It's multi-platform. It's a multi-platform experience because not only have you got the birds there and the pictures and a little description of them, all 20, you have it in Berle and you have it in Gaeilge. And then when you go online, you can actually listen to them. So I'll get a background music first there. Thank you very much. That's it there. And then you can pick out, the various birds like, that's a wren. That's definitely a wren. That's a wren. Ah, little robin redbreast. Ah, isn't that lovely? Little robin redbreast there. And my favourite, it's been waking me up for the last few months, the wood pigeon. It's a gentle wake-up call, I have to say. Isn't it? Yeah. Not so gentle. Oh, yeah. If it was legal and I had a weapon. Mr. Magpie, he does make a racket, doesn't he? And he likes to take control of his turf. I saw four magpies take on a fox once in the back garden. That was a sight to behold. And then... there you go. They're loud as well. That's the jackdaw. Oh, there's the crow, fresh from his treatment, his delousing treatment, on some chimney, some smoky chimney somewhere. That's all there. That's a nice little cacophony there of bird sounds. So they're all there from 1 to 20, robins to pied wagtails. That's nice. So there's major excitement up around Enniskerry. And you see, it's official now. Patrick Dempsey's in town and he's pictured online. Him from Grey's Anatomy and from the first Enchanted movie, because they're filming Disenchanted. So we must take a drive up there and see if we can have a look. Susie Dent, Susie Dent, she loves her words, and we every so often look in and see what words she's talking about. I like this one. It's a scurry funge, and it's a thing that you will be doing more and more over the coming months. Because for the first time in 14 months, you will be able to invite people into your house. And it all, I know it depends. It's some, it's like some extravagant scientific formula, isn't it? You know, it depends on who's vaccinated and how many people there are and how many households they're from. Anyway, scurry funge. So it's, the definition of scurry funge is to frantically attempt to tidy up before visitors arrive. We've all been there, even for your best mate, you know, who you think wouldn't care whether there were clothes there or books there or whether, you know, the sofa cushions were symmetrical and squared on with a protractor. But anyway, scurry funge, that's what you do. If you know someone's coming around and you just go frantically, you throw things into presses and into the spare room if you're lucky enough to have a spare room, and you just close the door because they're not going to go in there. So that's what you'll be doing now over the coming months. It's a nice word, isn't it? Scurry funge. Scurry funge. It's 25 years since we last won the Eurovision Song Contest. Did you know that? The Voice by Eimear Quinn. 25 years ago today. And of course tonight, Leslie Roy is flying the flag at the Eurovision Song Contest. Yes. Semi-final number one, live from Rotterdam in the company of Marty Whelan. And 16 countries taking part, and Leslie has to be voted as one of the top 10 to get through to Saturday's final. I really hope she does. I really hope she does, because it, you know, let's be honest. Do you watch the Eurovision final if Ireland aren't in it? You probably don't. You probably don't. But if Leslie could qualify tonight and get to the final on Saturday, it would be brilliant. And we'd have something to look forward to for the weekend. So we'll be talking to Linda Martin. She's royalty when it comes to the Eurovision Song Contest. And we'll be asking her what Leslie's chances are, who we need to watch out for both tonight and on Thursday night when the second semi-final's on, and on Saturday, because, you know, Holland are straight through, and then you've the other top five. What are they? You know yourself. Great Britain, France, Germany, somebody else there straight through to the final. I believe we said the favourite last week was France. Now, seemingly, it's Italy with this thing. Italy. There you go, Italy. Very Eurovision-y. I remember when Lordi won the Eurovision. We were over there. It was broadcast from Athens in Greece. And Lordi, you remember they were, was it Finland or Iceland or someplace like that? And they'd big masks on, and it was big metal sort of thing. It wasn't as heavy as that. And at the time, true blue Eurovision fans were very upset. They were upset because they thought, that's not what the Eurovision is about. The Eurovision is about, you know, ballads and dance songs, not about metal. And I remember two lads getting on the bus and giving out to the country that had won, the Lordi people, saying that they'd brought the Eurovision into disrepute. And then the year after, we sent Dustin. That sorted them out. Deux points. I see somebody's writing today. Is it Brenda Power in the Daily Mail? She's wondering, is that the reason that we haven't won since, or even been placed, even got through to the final, because of what Dustin did? They're holding it against us. I don't think that's the case. Are those birds still going? There you go. Good luck, birds. 51551 Ray at RTE.ie. Could you play a special request for my sister, Mary Taylor, from Firhouse in Dublin, who celebrates her birthday today? We all love her, from her sisters Sinead, Adrienne and Helen, and all her nieces and nephews and wider family from Leixlip and Dublin. So happy birthday, Mary or Marie Taylor. And occasionally the crow slips and falls down the chimney. Once I found a scared looking one on returning from holiday. In March I heard one in the stove and pulled it out. Not likely to have any bugs in its feathers now, says Fergal. I think it's rooks, not crows, that we have in Ireland. Hooded crows are common here, though. Brian and Mallow. Yeah, that's a hooded crow, according to the poster. That's a hooded crow. There you go. They all sound like they're giving out to you, don't they? You know? Yeah, I'm sorry. I won't do it again, I promise. Okay. Right, okay, fine. Yes, I know, I won't do it again. Yeah, so that's a hooded crow there. Now, I better tell you about our quiz of today. Today is the 18th of May. And we've cobbled together 10 questions on events that happened on this day over the years. And we have a prize. Great prize from the Carton House Hotel out there in County Kildare. To celebrate the reopening of Carton House as Ireland's first Fairmont-managed hotel, we're giving one lucky listener the chance to win a two-night stay with breakfast on both mornings and dinner on the night of your choice in the quaint and atmospheric setting of Kathleen's Kitchen, one of the resort's newest eateries. From tutored wine tasting, afternoon tea, rejuvenating treatments at Carton House Spa and Wellness, or golfing on one of the two championship golf courses, there are countless, countless experiences to choose from when you stay at Carton House. That's a good prize. Cartonhouse.com. Cartonhouse.com. If you want to find out more there. We're looking for two people to come on, answer five questions each, and maybe win that prize. But first, you have to answer our qualifying question, which is this. In which Irish county would you find the town of Newcastle West? In which Irish county would you find the town of Newcastle West? 1850 715900. That's 1850 715900. And we could be talking to you after 4 o'clock. Thank you. Thank you. Now, Ray, the only place for a bird is in the oven. Says Matt. Ah, Matt. 51551 ray@rte.ie. Good afternoon.
Is this the real life? Is this just fantasy?
In its entirety, Bohemian Rhapsody. From Queen. Did you know that Freddie Mercury started writing that in 1968? Wasn't released until 1976 when it stayed at number one for 9 weeks. Then it was a hit again, 1979. And it's an enduring song, isn't it? Definitely want to play on a road trip. Hail so heavy in Cavan, says Rosaline, that it came down my chimney, so it snowed in my sitting room. I love the emojis. Thanks, Rosaline. And once heard the Hooded Crow referred to as the fellow with the waistcoat. I can see that looking at the picture, because the wings are black and then the body is grey. So that would be the waistcoat part of it, the head's black. That makes complete sense to me. Which crow was it? Was it a jackdaw, a magpie, jay, hooded crow, or maybe a rook? I forgot a something. What's that?
A chuff.
A chuff? What's a chuff? I don't know what a chuff is. That's they say it's a hooded crow there. That's definitely a hooded crow because they wouldn't. It's the Irish Times after all. It's the paper of record. They wouldn't lead us astray. And I see that Niall Hatch is across it as well and all of Birdwatch Ireland. So it's top level information there. I drive a crane and this bloody seagull keeps coming every morning. I shouldn't have fed the pest in the first place, says Graham. He's company Graham, isn't he? I'm fascinated by crane drivers up there all alone for hours on end, weeing in a bucket. I know that's what they do because I was told years ago by a crane driver. And then they have this panoramic view of, you know, the city. Whether it's Cork or Limerick or Dublin, there's loads of them on the skyline at the moment. Loads of cranes, which is a good sign, I think. 51551 ray@rte.ie.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
A chuff looks like a crow, but it has a red beak and red feet, says Matt. Thanks for that, Matt. Somebody else says, a magpie is tormenting my cat every day for the last 2 weeks, chasing him everywhere he goes. I wonder, did my cat attack his nest to cause this behaviour? I think magpies just like a scrap. I think that's the type of birds they are. They just like being awkward and belligerent. And Trish has been on, I attended hospital to have an x-ray on my right ankle. They decided to x-ray both ankles. Panic. I'd only shaved one leg. Oh no, that's a bit of a scurry funge as well, isn't it? They've seen it all. They've seen it all, Trish. That's the thing about doctors and nurses. They've seen it all. A chuff is a small coastal member of the crow family. Very rare in Ireland. I'd never heard of a chuff before. So thank you for informing me on that. Now, yesterday, as we say, a big day. Thousands of retailers up and down the country finally reopened, and hopefully they're going to remain open after being closed since Christmas. Louisa Cameron is the owner of Raven Books. That's the way it falls, isn't it? In Blackrock, and we spoke to her a few weeks ago. She was doing her cycling deliveries of books around Blackrock and its environs. Well, she's back behind the counter and she's back on the line. How are you doing, Louisa?
Hi, Ray. How are things?
How exciting was yesterday?
It was very, very exciting. It was like Christmas, but good. Yeah. It was wonderful. It just was a fantastic day. What can I say? We were so busy, but not like in that manic way. People just wanted to come in and be calm. It was that sense almost of people returning to church.
Yes.
And just like breathing in. We had a little girl this morning and she came and she stood in the doorway. She was sanitizing her hands and she says, "Oh, the smell of new books." And it just captured the moment so perfectly. So
there's
it's a big change,
thing.
Obviously.
There's the thing, Louisa, you should have done during lockdown.
Oh,
the smell of a bookshop, you know, in a candle or something.
There is actually, apparently, a perfume company that does have a scent that smells like old books.
All right.
Which, frankly, I'm not 100% gone on that myself now, but however.
But there is that definite smell, isn't there? And we've missed it terribly.
Completely. Yeah. And that is something you literally cannot buy online. And just to be in the presence, just surrounded by them. And it's lovely having, in particular, the kids back in. We have a little reading nook, just a small little area where there's seating and fairy lights and little mirrors. And it's been dark for 4.5 months. It looks like a little cave. And to switch on those lights yesterday morning, like, it's literally magical. It just filled my heart. And then to see kids in there yesterday, they've been like saving up their book tokens and picked out what they wanted to read and then just sat in there and just had a quiet little read, and it was just wonderful to be able to see that again. And you realise how much you've missed, and the stories customers shared with you. I mean, you don't know what you've been missing until somebody tells you about the research they were doing for Mary Eames. She's an amazing Irish woman who saved an absolute ton of people, in particular children, during World War II from the Nazis. And she had been doing research for a book which was published a couple of years back. And she said in her research, she found the final words of a woman who sadly died in the Holocaust and was able to tell the woman's daughter what those words were. Those are stories.
Wow.
I have missed so much. And exactly, there's that pause of like, oh my goodness.
So hold on, stop there for a second. So
this
person who came into your shop did research for a book which she published a few years ago, but through other research she found out the last words of a dying woman in Auschwitz, and she was able to find that woman's daughter and tell her those words.
Yeah, it's not amazing. These are the stories. People just walk in off the street and tell me these stories. I feel so privileged. It's brilliant.
Yeah. I can imagine it was a joy just to watch the joy on people's faces yesterday.
It was, and just the smiles. I mean, masks aside, obviously, people are just so happy. And some people just wanted to come in and just have the chats and just connect. Obviously, we've got a lot of people when I was out doing my deliveries and connecting with them, but people who were beyond the distance I could deliver to.
Yeah.
And they were just so happy to come back in and come home in that sense of place that they have gotten such pleasure out of before and just been denied for so long, obviously, for everybody's benefit in the long run, but they really had that sense of a return, which was lovely to see.
Is this
they spent money as well.
They spend money, which is important for you.
Let me tell you. Yeah, piggy banks are broken yesterday, I think, definitely.
And what would have been the best seller yesterday? Would you know that off the top of your head?
It was really interesting to see, because it wasn't necessarily the brand new books coming out that people were buying.
Yeah.
I think they've been making lists over lockdown.
Uh-huh.
Some of them were kind of like, because we do the secondhand books as well, some really unusual, rare ones that might even be out of print. And that in particular, I think, was what people wanted as far as browsing goes, because those are the things you find completely by serendipity. The book you didn't know you needed. You came in for one thing and you found something completely different that you can't imagine life without now.
Yeah.
And that was what I think people yesterday in particular were really looking for. It wasn't necessarily the latest bestseller, which people have been to a degree keeping up with, because that's the kind of book, you know, you can browse online and then call your local bookshop and they'll write you or whatever.
Speaking of which, are you going to continue the deliveries on your bicycle?
Mostly no.
No, right.
The Bicycle D. Higgins, as my bike was in the end christened, the runners-up were Chain Austin and Molly Zoom. So yes, Bicycle D. Higgins won by hair's breadth.
Bicycle D. Higgins, that's great.
Right. Can't really be in two places at once. So now, obviously, with the shop being open, we need to have all hands on deck. Now, there was the exception. We had a call yesterday from somebody who I've been delivering to the last few months. And she said, you know, just as the restrictions are lifting, she went and she broke her foot. And she can't drive, she can't walk. And I was like, listen, you're up the road. Of course I'm going to drop books up to you.
Yeah.
So, you know, that of course we're going to continue to support our community in whatever ways we can. But for the most part, it's not a sustainable business model, practically, really. to be gone for a couple of hours from the shop every day, unfortunately. Mind you, given the weather this afternoon, there was no harm being inside with the hail that we had around them. So,
I can hear it in your voice, the excitement of being reopened. And that's mirrored and echoed around the country in retailers, bookshops, clothes shops, all sorts of shops around the country, which is brilliant. And we're all delighted to have you back. Thanks, Louisa. Mind yourself.
Correct. Lovely talking to you. Mind
see
yourself.
You now. Bye. Louisa Cameron, owner of Raven Books, it would have to be, and we're all talking about crows, etc., etc. And Patrick has been on with a crow story. Now, I haven't read through this, so I'll just go at it. One day years ago, my dog was about 6 months old. I used to take him up to St. Mary's School in Galway for a walk. Anyway, we would play ball, and this day, Mojo took off after a ball. However, caught sight of a crow and chased it. I roared, but they turned the corner out the gate. As I came around the corner, the dog jumped and caught the crow. As they landed, I pulled the dog off, but I suspect the crow died of a heart attack from the shock. Another crow followed. He was going cracked. I waited to see if the crow came around and finally left him on the grass so its partner could say his goodbyes. As we left and walked down the road, the partner crow followed, giving out to us incessantly from every lamppost until we got way down the road. We would go there sporadically, different days, different times, but for about 3 years after this, any time this crow saw us, he would follow us around St. Mary's, giving out to us. And when we would leave, he would carry on following, giving out until we had gone far enough away. Crows, it seems, stay with their partners for life and have a very good memory, as you can testify to, Patrick. Sort of a bit sad, that story, Patrick. A little bit sad.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Karma is an organisation in North Tipperary. It's based in Neenah. And Karma, C-A-R-M-H-A, stands for Connection and Recovery in Mental Health and Addiction. And Yvonne Moroney, who has benefited from the work of Karma and is now working for them, joins us in studio. How are you doing, Yvonne?
How are you, Ray?
And so does the founder of Karma, Donny Ryan. How are you doing, Donny?
Not too bad, Ray, thanks.
Good. We'll get you your microphones up there. Okay, thank you so much for coming up, and it's great to see you in studio. Yvonne, I'm going to talk to you first about your story, and then we'll bring Donny in and we'll find out more about Karma, because I would imagine your story is similar to a lot of the people who use Karma.
Yes.
Would that be fair enough?
Yeah.
Yeah.
More or less.
Are you born and bred in Neenah?
I was.
Right.
I am. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay. Can I ask you what age you are?
I'm 49 this year.
Right. Okay, that's important because people listen to, you know, they can't see you, so that puts you in a certain age group and people know what age you were and what decade you grew up in. So you had a tough childhood.
I did, yeah.
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 And I asked this question because it's my favourite question since I spoke to Edith Eger. She's a woman who survived Auschwitz. And it is, when did you stop being a child? She says it's a really important question.
Oh, God. About 10, I'd say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's when the abuse started.
No.
No, the abuse
started before that.
Right.
At the age of 6 till I was just 14 when it stopped.
Right.
Years later, he was convicted and sentenced into prison.
Right. Yeah. I'm wondering why you say 10 then. When did you stop being a child at 10?
I don't know. I suppose I started to get my mental health problems would have started around 11.
Right.
You know, hearing voices, facial tics. I used to make a lot of noises, you know, that constantly twitching, you know, which I learned later on were coping mechanisms for earlier on in my childhood.
Of course, dealing with what had happened to you with trauma.
Yeah, and around 13, 14, I started getting sleep paralysis, and that has stayed with me all my life.
Describe that to people.
Sleep paralysis is when you're falling asleep or waking up, you can't move your body and you can only move your eyes, but you can hallucinate and see things. So it was very scary.
Yeah.
It's extremely scary stuff, like.
And some scientists use that to explain why people see ghosts, for example, and that. Well, that's, yes, that's another thing.
Yeah.
So that was happened to you to your 14. Your mother became sick. What age were you when
I was 14? My mummy got cancer.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And she got it bad.
She did. She got it in her breast first, and she got it removed. And it over the 6 years, she died when I was 20. So she was. It was on and off. You know, she got into remission, and then she got it back.
Yeah.
You know, so.
This is your story, not Tony's. So
I know. I know.
Don't worry, we should have put him in the booth after all.
I don't know. I'm so nervous.
You're completely fine. It's just a chat. And you're an expert on your own life. You know, it's your life. That's what we're talking about. You know,
I'm mad.
But you see, the reasons for it. Mm. And were you the primary carer for your mother?
Towards the end, yeah.
Were you? And yeah. How did that happen? Because I know you're the youngest of nine children.
I'm the second youngest.
Second youngest, sorry.
Yeah. Just everybody had moved on, you know, married, yeah, and got jobs. And so when I was 17, 18, the only ones that were left at home was myself and my two brothers and my dad. So I took on I made up her chart of tablets and I, yeah, would give her.
Aha.
Her medication.
And that's important, isn't it?
Yes.
That
because I learned what medication done then.
Yes.
I learned what helped her sleep, you know, helped her relax. And that's when she died, when I was 20, that's where my drug started. I started taking my mother's medication.
And was there a lot of it left?
There was, yeah. Her wardrobes were full of it.
Right.
Yeah. Nobody ever came to collect it.
Right, and you knew, as you say, you knew what was there to relax her to.
Yeah, I learned, I taught myself, you know. So then I medicated myself because, you know, my world had ended when she died. You know, I she was everything. You know.
And did she know that you've been abused, Yvonne? No. So you started. Self-medicating, literally, because there were prescription drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And how long did that go on for? When did
that went on for about a year. And then I was sent to mental health when I was 22. So then I was medicated more.
Right.
You know, I'm not like bad mountain them or anything.
That was the system.
There was no talking back then.
Yeah.
You know, 25 years ago, it was just medicate you and send you home, and that's exactly what happened.
Right,
and I just got worse.
So you were a person who'd come from taking prescription drugs, going into an institution, and they gave you more prescription drugs,
yeah,
to try and deal with that.
Yeah.
When you say it like that, it sort of doesn't make sense, does
it?
No, it doesn't. No. And you were sent home.
Oh yeah, you know, and I was put on these tablets that I'm only off 3 years,
Right.
Like I'm clean and sober three years in July. You know, this was a lifelong 25 years of taking these sort of tablets all the time.
Okay.
You know, different.
And then I suppose, as often happens, you felt you needed something else or...
So I graduated then from prescription drug, and then I found speed. You know, speed was my main one.
And was it easy enough to find speed in Nina?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
What effect does speed have on you?
You just... It actually blocks away your feelings.
Right.
But you have energy and you can do things. I didn't take drugs to party. I took drugs to survive, you know, from one day to the next, to get energy, you know. And when I didn't have that, it would be painkillers that would, you know, substitute.
Yeah. It's that thing, isn't it? Getting out of your head.
Yeah.
And your head wasn't a nice place to be in at all.
Absolutely not. Oh. Absolutely not. Yeah.
Do you think a lot of people understand that? Because it's interesting that you specify there, I didn't take drugs to party. No.
And you know what, right? A lot of people do understand it, you know, because I wasn't a massive, you know, maybe at one stage... Maybe in between 23 and 25, there would have been a party stage. But the rest of my life up to the age of 45 was to survive, you know.
Yeah.
When I was 25, it was my first day in Clonmel Mental psychiatric unit. And I was there for a couple of weeks. But when I came out, I went to Asheri, a fantastic treatment centre.
For addiction?
For addiction.
Yeah.
And I came home when I was 25, you know, and it was like, I stayed clean and sober for a while, but memories and the trauma from stuff, I couldn't deal with it in my head. You know, my past was out in the front of my head constantly. So I slipped back into addiction.
Yeah.
And
So taking drugs is like switching off the movie that's going on in your head.
Yeah.
And then, of course, when you get sober, the movie's still running.
Yeah, and it's worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I anytime I drank, the drink would make me get arrested.
Right.
Yeah.
You're notorious in Nina.
No.
I believe.
Don't say that. Tony nodding.
It's true. It's
I know.
True.
I look at.
Well, you were angry. I'm not. You?
I was very angry. Yeah.
Yeah. With who? With everybody or?
With everybody.
Yeah, right. Why?
I don't know. It's just like when my mother died. It was like I hated everybody and right. I hated everything, and I just wanted to. Yeah, I've hurt a lot of people, and I am extremely sad about that. Mm. You know.
So you've actually hit people?
Yeah. I've put people in hospital.
Have you?
Yeah, and it's not a nice thing to
no.
say, but it's horrible.
Try and describe that anger that you must have been going through.
It's like a black rage. When I used to lose it, I wouldn't remember.
Right.
Until I'd wake up in the cop station in the cell, or one of my sisters would be waking me up in the bed, you know, what did you do, you know? And I'd be like, why? What are you talking about? You know, there was a lot of nights like that.
Yeah. And when you were doing that, when you were waking up in the Garda station or wherever, when you looked in the mirror after that, what were you saying to yourself?
Oh, I've always saw myself as horrible.
Have you?
Donny would have asked me all through. I mean, I joined Donny's group 8 years ago in mental health, and he'd always go around the room and ask us how we saw ourselves today, and I'd always say scumbag. And that's all I would always say, you know, that's the way I saw myself.
Yeah.
Because I never felt any way good, you know. I felt worthless, always.
The poor thing doesn't even come close to it. Like, how could you possibly have any positive self-image when, you know, what happened to you from the age of six? That's, you hadn't got a hope really, had you?
No, but I had great help from my family, you know.
Yeah.
You know, but my sisters and my brothers, but, you know, I had to hit rock bottom a lot of times before I could come up.
So you were in and out of
psychiatric units.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And did you get a diagnosis? Did they give you a diagnosis?
Well, not really. Because they never could pinpoint what was going on.
Right.
I never had a diagnosis till about 4 years ago when I was told I was suffering with PTSD.
Right.
And I hadn't a clue that I could be suffering with something like that.
Yeah.
As you know, people think that's a soldier thing.
Yes.
You know?
But it's any trauma, you see.
It is any trauma.
Yeah.
And I've learned that,
yeah.
You know.
And you went 8 years of trauma you went through. You poor thing. Mm-hmm. And this man sitting across from you has sort of saved your life in a way.
Absolutely.
Has he? Or is that overstating it?
Well, I will tell you one thing. Okay. The reason I'm on this earth is my children. Okay.
Right.
My three beautiful children. And then the other reason, Donny. And my partner, Sean.
Okay.
Sean and Denny.
Yeah. I got with Donny 2009.
Yeah.
I started with Donny down in mental health.
Yeah. And so it's karma, connection and recovery in mental health and addiction. We spoke to Mary last week as well, and your story is quite similar to Mary's. And it sounds to me like the story that you know, is replicated in a lot of people who suffer from addiction. And that's trauma. Some people reckon that 70 to 75% of people who suffer from addiction have suffered a trauma, a childhood trauma.
I think so. And at least 70-75%, if not more. The way Yvonne introduced it, like when you think about it, right, I was working in mental health and she came through the mental health system to me, which was, you were referred to me because of the addiction stuff. And when you think of like all the trauma that there had been and all of the losses, Lorna had died, I think, just then.
Who's Lorna?
My sister.
Your sister, yeah.
And your mum had died.
Yeah. My mum, yeah.
And we were trying to talk about recovery and feelings and stuff like that. But the real problem was trying to get beyond the, even to make a connection with the trauma. Because when I said it to you first, there wasn't, it didn't really register with you for, about a year?
Yeah.
So you made no connection between my trauma and addiction? No connection whatsoever?
No.
And you were a woman in your 40s, your early 40s?
Well, no, 20s.
No, but I mean, when you came to Donny, you were in your early 40s.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. 30s.
Yes. Sorry.
But there was none. I'm after killing somebody. There was none. And it took quite a long time. See, we do this laughing as a kind of a
thing. It's actually a coping mechanism. But
no, that's fair enough. I'm with you. I'm with you on that.
After ages of... And it was difficult because, to be fair, you weren't connected to anything, really. It, like, totally disconnected would probably describe how things were. And then there was one afternoon, because I used to see you in an afternoon, and I'm not really sure what triggered it, but Yvonne kind of crossed her hands and put her arms on the desk like that. And when she puts her head down, you can't see her face at all because the hair goes down. And it was 3 or 4 huge tears fell onto the desk.
Right.
And that was the first sign of any real emotion that you had shown, I think. Yeah. Do you remember it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And actually, this is a teardrop is the symbol for karma now. All and right. It's based on that all incident, right. But it took a lot of sort of slow, easy, you know, like...
It took 12 years, don't it?
Yeah, but even in the beginning, to make the connection between it was like just lots of time and, you know, trying to persuade you that you were going to get recovery, that you could do it. Because I believed, from the very day I met Yvonne, I believed that she could do it. Yeah. I knew she could do it.
Yeah.
It was going to take a while to get to that point. And she's been involved in everything with karma all the time since. All the time.
You see, you have mental health and addiction.
Yeah.
And there's that it's not, I wouldn't say it's a buzz phrase, but it's a phrase that's used and people use it and they say that there isn't enough of it in this country and there definitely aren't enough services to deal with it. And it's dual diagnosis. So if we've established already that 70-75% of addiction is caused by childhood trauma, which leads to PTSD, sometimes in your case, so it's a mental health issue, then surely you have to deal with both of them together. It doesn't make sense to deal with them independently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even dual diagnosis, that probably doesn't cover it because there's lots of different issues, aren't there? You know what I mean? You stop, you have the addiction stuff, you have the mental health, but you have a whole lot of other issues that'll have to be dealt with as well. But yeah, I mean, the piece in the paper... I David Raleigh said in the paper that I said that the system is nuts. Well, what I meant was it really doesn't make sense to try to deal with the addiction in one place and the mental health somewhere else. And the history is that if you go to the addiction services, they'll tell you they don't do mental health. And if you go to mental health, they say they can't do the addiction stuff. So you're
if you,
all over the place.
If you present with a mental health issue, they'll probably tell you, we can't deal with you until you're clean.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that has actually happened
with
one of the girls. She had a huge problem with codeine. And I walked into an office and they were just saying to her, we can't help you until you stop using. But that's not true. Because we've proven time and again that we can work with people while they're still using and while they still have the active addiction.
That's very important.
Isn't that essential?
About karma,
isn't that essential?
I think it is. Yeah, I totally agree with that. But
because you can't compartmentalise your addiction and your trauma, can you?
No.
You can't say, I'm going to park the trauma outside the door now and I'm going to deal with my addiction. That's not possible.
And I think
you don't be born wanting, I'm going to be an addict.
That wasn't your ambition. No.
And I think what's even more difficult is that when people get to the point of where you were at, where Yvonne was at, their lives are still chaotic. So instead of making it handier for them to avail of an integrated service, we tell them they've got to go here, there, and probation services or TUSLA, whatever it is. and go to psychiatry and go to addiction services. So it makes it much more difficult for them.
There should be a one-stop shop.
Yep. There are services that do it, but we really need to have it integrated, that you deal with all the stuff in one place. Because you know the lads, when they stop using, their feelings and emotions are all over the place. And you said, like, sit with the emotions.
Yeah.
It's very difficult when you've come off of everything to just be able to...
But that's the movie. As I say, to use that analogy, the movie continues to play.
Yeah.
And all you want to do is stop it.
Yeah.
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 And you need sort of pretty strong tools to do that, don't you?
You do.
Yeah. So talk to me a bit about that then, when you stop getting out of your head on drugs and you had to face up to your trauma.
Well, it wasn't just like, you know, I woke up and I, you know, it was a gradual over years of being with Tony. I was with Tony 4 years before I joined his group, one of his groups. That was the best decision I'd ever made in my entire life, was to join the group. They're fantastic. You know, we're all together for the last 8 years, and there new people come, you know, people come and go. But so I gradually kind of like, you know, I try and get clean. I would make Tony do drug tests on me, you know, to try and stop.
Yeah.
You know, but I suppose when I was 44, 45, I really hit a really dark place, you know, and I'll only say this about it is that it was either, you know, I was going to give up or, you know, I had to fight. And I fought, and it took me 12 months, but I came off 9 different substances over a 12-month period of bringing myself down off them.
And some of them were prescription? Some of them?
Most of them were prescription.
Right, okay. And did you drink?
No, I came off the drink, everything.
Right.
Yeah, 12 months of getting sick, really extremely, extremely sick.
But what about your head then?
Okay, so my head, I cry a lot. I cried a lot in that first year. And at the same time, karma was getting up, you know, like the community meetings were being held to try and form a place.
Yeah.
And I knew I had to go to all the meetings, no matter how sick I was. Sometimes I'd sit in the meetings, I'd be just crying at the back. You know, I had to be there because I knew there was a purpose for me in karma, you know. What did you ask me?
No, I was asking about your head because, we've been talking about using drugs to blot out what happened, all the bad stuff. So when you don't have the drugs to do that...
Well, then everything
and it
comes
re-emerges,
back.
Yeah. And how do you deal with that?
Everything comes back and a lot more comes back that you don't even realise. You know, right. I still wake up and have new memories that I've never, ever had. You know?
Now, how do you cope with those?
I'm going to tell you how I done it, okay?
Right.
So, after I came off of everything, okay, I cried a lot and I get sick and whatever. My kids' dad used to take them on a Wednesday and a Thursday night. So then I was kind of like involved in karma then. So I'd never ever kind of like been on my own and stayed on my own in my house. Like I hated it, you know. So I started on a Wednesday and Thursday. I'd go home from karma on a Wednesday and I'd lock myself into the house.
Right.
Okay. And I'd sit with everything.
Right.
Okay. And I'd cry. And I'd scream. And the neighbours never reported me, but they must think I'm fucking nuts. Sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry, Ray. I'm so sorry.
That's completely fine. Yeah.
You know. And
that's,
your
own.
Yeah.
On your own.
And I wouldn't come out till the Thursday evening. Well, Thursday after when the kids would be home from school. And I'd done that for weeks and weeks and weeks. And it started to get better. You know. It was like I had to rewire my whole brain. Everything was negative. All my thoughts, everything that came from my mind was negative. So it was like I had to rewire it and replace the negative with positive. And that was extremely hard. But it's possible.
Yeah.
I've done it.
Yeah.
You know?
It must have been because Nina isn't a big place.
No.
And you were so notorious. But I'm just saying your recovery must... You know, people must know about your recovery as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that, do you think that's a good thing, well, or a bad,
like,
thing?
You know, not many people would have saluted me in my 20s, but when I go downtown now, Tony says I'm like a celebrity because everyone's like, how are you?
Well, you want? She is, yeah. She's a total celebrity now.
But, yeah, you know, and it's, look at it, it's still hard.
Oh, I'd say it is.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
And I'm still learning and I'm still trying to cope with stuff, you know, and everyone, like, life is, I say to the lads, life is still shit, but I can handle it better.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Yeah. So it sounds to me like our, you know, mental health services haven't been fit for purpose for a long time. And in a country that has a serious problem with alcohol, you know, before you go near prescription drugs and illicit drugs.
Yeah. I worked in mental health. That's where we would have come across each other first. And they're really stretched. The funding, the facilities, what's needed for mental health is not up to scratch. But that's not, the people in mental health work really hard.
Yeah.
And they do the really work. Because I had worked in that place, Asheree, before as well. So I had the experience of both. But, you know, it to say like that things aren't fit for purpose, I suppose what we found, at the time in Nina, the only place to go, there was a service down in the community service, but the groups that we had in the mental health service became the place to be. That all, we had three groups.
Yeah.
And what happened then, Dr. Marie Uppaboon came as a junior doctor as well, and she had an interest in addiction. She would have spoken to me quite a bit about it. So between us, we started what we call motivational groups. And then we got the groups together. We took each group individually and we asked them what helped to recovery, what hindered, and what did they want.
And what came out on top?
What came out was that there was no mention of medication, there was no mention of doctors, and there was no mention of hospitals. What they wanted was a place that they could access when they needed to.
Right.
To get treatment when you wake up in the morning, you say, I'm going to do something with this, they could go to a place.
To talk?
Yeah.
Is it all talk?
That's what
talk,
they wanted. Talk, and they didn't want to feel judged and they didn't want to feel stigmatised. Those were the three things. So we started a community groups that's just meetings.
Yeah.
And we didn't even advertise it. We just started it in the pastoral centre and about 50 people showed up.
Hold that for a sec. I just have to get a commercial break out of the way and I'll do that and we'll talk a little bit more after that. Hold on for a sec.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now we're speaking to Yvonne Moroney and Donny Ryan from Karma, C-A-R-M-H-A, and you can find them at karmaireland.ie, and they need support. You don't get any funding from the government?
No.
Do you? No.
We don't. Right. We got some funding for the girls, Carmel and Yvonne went, I said back to college. You said you only went once. They went back to DCU to do peer support and they trained and qualified as peer supporters. And the roles of peer support that Yvonne is in now was funded by Rethink Ireland.
Right.
Now that's limited. So, but we've managed to get some grants and the locals have been great. The fundraising has been amazing. But we don't have a statutory, we don't have statutory funding.
We need groups like Karma all over the country, don't we?
Yes.
Because
we think
the problem with addiction and drugs is huge.
We know it works.
We know it works.
Yes.
They're not just.
I always say to Donny, how do we know that we're doing a good job? He says, if they come back.
Well, look
everybody
at you.
Comes
look
back.
At you. Look at you.
we do believe it does work. It's really good, yeah.
Tell Yvonne that she gives hope to those who try to live day by day from loss of hope and addiction. I'll remember her words today. And two, the most amazing one for people. Yvonne is an inspiration to everyone in Karma. Went to DCU last year and is an accomplished peer worker. And Donny is a lifesaver. Yvonne's story is inspiring and I love her laugh. And my name is Dermot Fennell. I did a peer support course in DCU with Yvonne. It was level 8 course to support people struggling with their mental health. And the woman you have in front of you did it. Found it tough, like a lot of us did at times, but she saw it through. This woman has a lot to give and worth listening to. Fair play, Yvonne. DCU class 2019-2020.
Wow,
that's Dermot
there. That's lovely.
Thank you so much for coming in and sharing your story. I think it's important that people hear more stories like that so they can understand what's going on in people's lives and maybe they won't be as judgmental.
Exactly. And recovery is possible.
Recovery
no matter
is possible.
What age you are.
Yes, your story is one of hope as
if I can do it, anyone can do it.
Right. Yvonne Moroney, thanks very much. Donny
Ryan,
thank you.
Thanks
you. And it's Tosha and I'm the Free Skelton and Nook to La Kiran of Farta. Grimaga Kiran, thank you very much. And that's Karma, C A R M H A Ireland, dot IE. And they're doing amazing work down there. And the more I read and the more I talk to people about trauma and addiction, it becomes very obvious. Why weren't we talking about this 20, 30 years ago? And maybe our mental health services need to catch up. Now, I know there are some places who do dual diagnosis and treat both addictions and mental health at the same time, but a lot of our services deal with one or the other. And that doesn't make sense to me at all. On lesser important things, Anne's been on about crows. I covered my parents and brother's grave with marble-type pebbles, oblong shape, about 1 inch by a half an inch. Cost €750. 3 weeks later, I returned to the grave and the crows had removed about half the pebbles. No idea what they did with them. We'll throw it out there. Why would crows be taking pebbles off a grave? Anybody can help Anne out on that. €750. Gone a-begging. Choughs, you can see them off the cliff walk in Dunmore East. They nest in pairs on the cliffs. They don't gather in flocks. They mate for life like most members of the crow family. That's Gráinne Freeman. And I can tell you what happened 25 years ago today. My daughter Katie arrived after my family sent in a message telling me to hurry on or they'd miss the bus to the Neil Diamond concert. So they weren't watching the Eurovision when Eimear Quinn won with The Voice. And a magpie is a thug in gentleman's clothing, says Rob in Dublin. And on Yvonne, a brave woman, congratulations to her and well done on her recovery and telling her story. My ex-wife had a very similar story, but with alcohol rather than speed. The services for dealing with trauma and addiction together aren't great, as Yvonne said. Much more needs to be done to help. She's a great success story, says Paul. Now, it's time for our quiz of today. Today being the 18th of May. It's more than halfway through the month of May. Where did that go? And today's prize, indeed all this week, comes from the Carton House Hotel. They're celebrating their reopening. Ireland's first Fairmont-managed hotel. And they're giving one lucky listener a chance to win a two-night stay with breakfast on both mornings and dinner on the night of their choice in the quaint and atmospheric setting of Kathleen's Kitchen. Loads of things to do down there. There's a spa, there's golf, there's wine tastings, afternoon tea, all sorts of things. Cartonhouse.com for more details. Orla Howard, how are you?
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Not too bad. You're in Loughrea in the county of Galway.
Yeah, that's right.
And you ring every day, but it's your first time to get through, is it?
The phone used to never ring. I was actually going to email you so many times saying, what's wrong with that line?
Your phone isn't working. Get it sorted.
Yeah, it's not working. It would never even ring, like.
Now, here you are. So,
I know, yeah.
What's your story? Was there retail therapy yesterday or what did you do?
No. I'm not working, I'm afraid, yeah. No, right. We're working from home, so.
Right.
But it's all good. Hopefully the weekend we'll get out for it.
Now, 95% of people say they would like to continue working from home in some shape or form, according to an NUIG survey published this morning. Are you one of that 95% or what's your story?
Yeah, in some shape or form. Not full time, I don't think.
Okay, so give us the pros first, the pros of working from home.
No travelling.
Yes, no commute, that's
so
a good one.
And I suppose you might get little odd jobs done during the day or whatever.
Yes, a bit life administration, you get that done.
It probably takes a bit of the stress out, like the dinner is done, you know.
Yeah.
And that kind of stuff.
So what about
it can be lonely.
That's the disadvantage, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, you probably feel maybe a little bit disconnected.
Mm.
Yeah.
Which isn't good. Which isn't good, yeah.
Oh no, it's grand. So
maybe
a bit mixture of both is perfect, I think.
I think most people will go for that. I think 30% of people wanted to stay at home for good, and then a lot more people wanted a hybrid, as they call it, a mixture of maybe 3 days at home, 2 days in the office, or the other way around.
Yeah, or the other way around.
Exactly. Who else is at home?
Okay, so I have Connor. So he's in sixth class. We have Chloe. She's junior cert.
Yeah.
And Ross is actually out working in his shed.
Okay. Ross is the husband.
Daddy. Yeah.
Daddy, okay. What does he do out
No, he's the husband, but yeah.
Yeah, what does he do out in the shed?
Oh, God. He's a carpenter, so at the minute he's actually building a bar for somebody.
Ah, yeah, well, it's real work, because some men retreat to the shed and they don't,
So it will become one of those sheds when he retires.
Yes, yeah, but at the moment he's a productive man working from a shed. Okay.
Absolutely.
Now, you're up against Steve Foster from Sandyford. How are you doing, Steve?
How are you doing, Michael?
Now, is that a bad or a good line? You're from Sandyford, but you live where?
I'm in Donnymead.
Right.
Donnymead, on the north side.
Okay, and what do you do for a living, Steve?
I'm a warehouse manager. Mail room equipment.
Okay.
You know, like your franking machines and folding machines and all that kind of stuff.
Are you walking around, Steve, or are you on a hands-free, or what sort of a phone are you on there?
No, I'm sat down. I'm in an echoey office.
Oh, yeah, no, but that sounds good there. Whatever you're doing there, try and keep that position.
Stay there, yeah. Okay. Don't move.
Don't move your head. Don't move the phone. Just stay right there. So a warehouse manager, so that means you can't work from home, really, can you? Or can you?
No. I tried having a few days last year, but it didn't work.
Okay.
So I need to come in, so...
Yeah. And who brought you over to Ireland?
My family's originally from Cavan, so you know we have roots here. But I moved over 21 years ago with an ex-girlfriend,
right?
And she's now in New Zealand, and I'm still here.
And you found love elsewhere?
Yeah. I'm married, two children now.
Great. And what are the children doing?
Sam is 9. He's in first class in Holy Trinity in Donnymead, and Amy's just finished her first year in Trinity.
What's she doing?
She's doing English and history.
Oh, wow. Right.
Yeah, it's very good.
She's living the normal people life, or maybe you hope she isn't. I don't know. Okay, so 5 questions each. Orla and Steve, whoever answers most correctly gets the prize. If it's a draw, we go to a tie-break situation. Good luck to you both. Here we go.
Good luck.
Okay. Good luck, Steve.
Bird whistling there somewhere. Okay, right. Question number 1 for you, Orla. On this day in 1941, the Italian army in Ethiopia surrendered to Britain. On what continent would you find Ethiopia?
Africa.
That's the correct answer. Steve, on this day in 1980, Fernando Terry was elected president of Peru. On what continent would you find Peru?
South America.
That's the correct answer. Orla, second question is an audio one. Have a listen to this.
Are you in the habit of riding off in the rain with strangers?
It's the best way to make you leave.
What if I can ever work up the courage to ask you again? I'll send you a written warning first.
On this day in 1995, Braveheart premiered at the Seattle Film Festival. Can you name the actor who played the lead role and directed the film?
Mel Gibson.
Correct answer. Steve, your audio question. Have a listen to this.
Well.
You think.
Well, maybe.
You're not saying.
I know it sounds crazy.
Whoa, you don't think that Aunt Irma is visiting us?
The symptoms, Roy.
I am a man. He's a man. We're men.
On this day in 2014, at the 60th BAFTAs, that Irish actor was nominated for a Best Actor Award for his role in The IT Crowd. Can you name him?
Chris O'Dowd.
Yes, well done. From the back of your brain, it's correct.
Yeah.
Chris O'Dowd. Third question for you, Orla. On this day in 1852, Massachusetts ruled that all school-aged children must attend school. The state of Massachusetts has a coastline. Is that true or false?
False.
No, it's true. Yeah, it's on the east coast of America, so it has a coastline with the Atlantic Ocean. Okay, Steve, your question. On this day in 1891, Rice University in Houston, Texas was chartered. The state of Texas has a coastline. Is that true or false?
True.
Yes, it has a coastline onto the Gulf of Mexico. Right, Orla, your fourth question is a music question. Have a listen to this. Won't you come on over? On this day in 2007, that singer married Blake Fielder Civil in Miami, in Florida. Can you name her?
Amy Winehouse.
Is the correct answer. And for you, Steve, your music question, have a listen to this. By the rivers of Babylon, where we sat down, yeah, we will. That song, Rivers of Babylon, was number 1 on this day in 1978. Can you name the group?
Boney M.
Is the correct answer, yes. So 3-4. Orla, you need to get this one right to stay in with a chance. And hope that Steve gets his final question incorrect. Okay, good luck with this. On this day in 1765, fire destroyed a large part of Montreal in Canada. Which of these countries has a larger population than Canada? Argentina, Saudi Arabia, or Australia?
Oh, God.
Argentina.
You're going with Argentina. I can tell you that Australia has a population of 25 million. Saudi Arabia has a population of 34 million. Canada has a population of 37 million. And you are correct because Argentina has a population of 45 million. So you're okay. Still in. You're still in there.
Okay.
You can't do anything else. Steve,
yeah.
You're on four, so two is Orla, but you have this question in hand. Good luck with this. Win it or get it right and you win the prize. If not, we go to a tiebreak situation. Here it is. On this day in 1917, Eric Satie and Pablo Picasso's ballet, Parade, premiered in Paris, France. Which of these countries has a larger population than France? Kenya, Italy or Pakistan?
Pakistan.
He says with confidence. Italy has a population of 60 million, Kenya 53 million, France 65 million and Pakistan a whopping 220 million. So that is correct, sir. Orla, you're up against a good one there in Steve.
No problem.
We're going to send you out.
Congratulations,
Steve.
Thanks,
all. Oh, the mug.
We're going to send you out a radar show mug. Yes, so you don't.
Oh,
go,
fantastic!
You don't go away empty-handed. Right.
I wanted that anyway. Yeah, right. Brilliant.
Okay, nice talking to you, Orla. Mind yourself.
Thanks,
stay
Ray,
safe.
Bye.
Bye now. Bye, bye. Steve. That's a great prize there. You're off to Carton House Hotel for two nights, breakfast, dinner and loads of things to do out there. Cartonhouse.com if you want to have a look before you go.
That's fantastic. My wife definitely should be thrilled.
She'll be delighted with you. She'll be delighted with you. Okay. Great. Well done, Steve. Well done.
Bye.
An RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now we're going to be previewing tonight's first semi-final in this year's Eurovision Song Contest after this. Them are the days. Come on, Linda. Here we go.
How are you doing,
Linda
Ray?
Martin, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you keeping?
Oh, great. 1992.
Isn't it scary?
That's 29 years ago.
Yeah, and it's like yesterday to me, but I know, 29 years, frightening.
What's the standout memory from that night, Linda?
Probably I stayed sober. I think that's probably the all-abiding memory because, I mean, we all know nobody parties like the Irish. And there was an awful lot of free champagne and things backstage in the green room while the votes were coming through. So I think I was the only one sober at the end of it. But it, no, glorious memories, really too many. Far too many.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, written by the great Johnny Logan, Why Me?
Yes, yes.
And one of the things that's different about tonight and Thursday night and Saturday night is that there's no green room because of COVID-19 restrictions. So Leslie Roy and the Irish contingent will not be sitting there with the Irish flags waving as the votes come in.
No, they won't. I believe they're all locked up in hotel rooms except for official business. So it's not exactly 2 weeks of crack now, which it usually is. So they're being very subdued.
Yeah. So Leslie Roy, it's all a bit odd because Leslie was ready to go last year and of course
that's
it was cancelled,
right,
and now
yeah.
She's back this year. And what do you think our chances are? We haven't been doing well over the last number of years, have we?
Well, no, we haven't. And I mean, we can go through reams of diatribe and just try to figure out what went wrong. But the basic thing is, I think we need to go back to writing ballads. We need to get our big songwriters back out again with faith. And this is the key. They need to have faith in whatever artist is going to come along and sing their song. Because everything is different now. We don't have the variety shows in theatre or TV for all of these young people to come through, get experience, get recognised, move on to a higher level, if you like. And it's very difficult. But if you put it this way, if you're a major songwriter, and we do have a lot of them, are you going to give your song to a beginner? Because the Eurovision stage rate is not for beginners. It really isn't. It's a massive, massive undertaking to ask somebody. And we just got to rectify it. Songwriters have to come out. We have to try and do something with new talent. And until we do that, it's going to be very difficult to win again. But I think we will if we go back to basics.
But I suppose you could say the same about other countries, that they don't have that sort of process anymore that you described, coming up through the ranks, if you like.
Well, it's no way. Honestly, it's a different kettle of fish in Europe. There's a lot of work out there.
Is there?
Oh, Jesus, there is. serious amount of work between festivals. And I'm not just talking about something like Electric Picnic or something like that. I'm talking about the festivals that happen year in, year out throughout the summer in Europe. There's an awful lot of work with TV shows, not so much cabarets, because that's all gone by by the wayside, but there's an awful lot of work out there.
Okay, well, I'll play a bit of Leslie's song.
Yeah, do.
By the sounds of it, you've written it off already, have you? Because you're talking about going back to ballads.
No, I'm talking about the future. I'm hoping that she does very well. I sincerely hope Ireland qualifies tonight. And of course, there's no outright winner this year, so it's open to everybody.
What do you mean? You don't think there's one standout one? No.
No. But that's the opinion from everybody. Now, there's a few favourites floating around. There's France, there's Italy, there's Switzerland, and there's Russia. Now, I don't like Russia at all, but there's a few floating around that people are talking about. But normally, you find that they're saying, definitely, that song's going to win. And, of course, we have Malta. I think it's a really current song. I could hear it on radio and it's bright. Let's go through
a few of those then. You don't like the Russian one. Let's play that. Russian Woman. And people will see that tonight. It's song number three.
Теперь зарубите себе на носу. Я вас не виню, а себя я чертовски люблю.
See, I haven't heard it before. I love that. I love that. It's a bit gimmicky, and I just love that. Okay, you mentioned France.
I don't think you're going to be listening to it again.
Okay, right, Gio. France, Voila. We played it last week, I think, and it is very quintessentially French. So we'll play a bit, and then you can give us your opinion then.
Okay.
Voila.
Yeah, she's a beautiful girl, and it's a big ballad, but I think her voice is too shrill.
Okay, right, you see, you'd spot that. I didn't spot that at all.
But I mean, she's one of the favourites. But go over to, have you got Switzerland there?
No, but I have Malta. you mentioned Malta. Here's Malta.
Oh, Malta, yeah. Je me casse. If you don't get it,
see, that sounds to me that it was contemporary about 4 years ago, but maybe that's the Eurovision for you.
Yeah, well, that is typical Eurovision, all right. But I actually don't have a favourite. I'm just hoping that Ireland do well.
Yes,
but there's no standout song for me this year. But having said that, you see, I've only heard about four or five of them.
Yeah. How are you apart from all that? Do you get excited by the Eurovision anymore?
I mean, I owe it so much, really.
Yeah.
I love it. And I love everybody connected with it, no matter where we happen to be in the world. But it's just been so good to me, Ray. It's like all your birthdays coming at once. And I just use it and will continue to use it for as long as possible.
It'll be tinged with sadness now, won't it? Because the passing of Shay Healy, the great Shay Healy.
Oh, yeah. Ah, listen. That was such a sad day. It really was. And I was so distraught myself over Johnny Logan's reaction, because Shay and Johnny were so close for so long. And I remember he was talking on radio that day. We were all on a 3 or 4 way call, and he couldn't get the words out. You know, it was really, really sad, Dave, from a very talented man. And we're losing so many of those special people, because Shay was an amazing guy. I mean, he had the chat, he had the brains, he had the talent, he had everything. Just a super, super person.
Multi-talented.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he'd be missed, And who or where will you watch it tonight now?
Oh, I'm at home.
You're at home.
Yes.
I was just saying earlier on that if we do get through, it just gives us something to look forward to on Saturday night.
wouldn't it give us all a little boost?
Italy, you mentioned as well. We'll give that just a little bit of a blast, because I can't imagine it's your cup of tea, Linda Martin.
Okay, go on. No. It's definitely not my cup of tea, but remember the year that Lordy won.
Yes. Yes.
You see, so, and I'm thinking, because of lockdown pretty much everywhere, there's going to be people at home tonight that maybe wouldn't be interested in Eurovision, but they're sitting there with their moms and their dads.
That's
and they're saying, oh, we'd give some.
Yes.
Yeah, so they might,
yes,
that sort of thing might get a vote from the younger people,
and
but not my favourite anyway.
It could be a protest vote against traditional Eurovision and against the lockdown. So there you go.
Yeah, it could be. It could
Linda,
be.
Listen, when all of this is over, you come in and sit down and we'll have a longer chat.
I'd love to, yeah, because I have a couple of things coming up and
great,
I'd love to talk to you about them.
Brilliant.
Yeah. For
the moment, Linda Martin, enjoy tonight.
We will.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
And good luck to Leslie, flying the flag for Ireland in the first semi-final of the Eurovision. It's on at 8 o'clock on RT2 in the company of Marty Whelan. That's it from us. Cormac and Sarah are on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.